And welcome to the second episode of Warnouns and Renown. This is your host, Chris Young, speaking. And today we have two special co-hosts. They were the people that actually came up with the glorious name for the episode. So we have Mark Williams.
Say hello.
And we also have Amsel von Spreckelsen.
Hello.
Who also has a glorious name, I must admit. So not only has one, but came up with a good one as well. So what I would say first of all is today we're going to go through two casters of their choosing, and then we're going to go through the rating system that we used last episode. If you've not heard the first episode so far, it's not the end of the world, but I would probably recommend going back and having a read, because we go through in detail all the ratings that we use, why we're using them, and also you get to listen to Rich try and make Vlad 2 a grade in every category, which is always quite funny. So what we'll do is, in the essence of time, because we've got lots of details to go through, is we will hand this over to Amsel to start with. He's going to introduce his caster, give you some details, and then we're going to go through the ratings. So Amsel, I'll throw it over to you. Who have you chosen?
Thank you, Chris. I've chosen Scar 2 as my favourite caster. He is, quick background, he's the second caster I bought because I love the model. And then basically I learned to play Crix with her because I found anyone quite boring. But I think, so that's why she's my favourite caster. So we go through, the front of her card.
Just to check, was it because she had a great rack?
I mean, that is
worst
pun in the entire of Overtier Press's roster of bad puns. But you know, I also have got the Scar bust on my painting table at the moment. So, yeah,
a bust with a bust.
Yes. So she's chock full of things. Her card. Front of the card, she's got four weapons. There's the Great Rack, which is an auto knockdown power 10. She's got a gun blade, which is no one ever uses. She's got Takarix again, which is her range 1, power strength 13 magic weapon. She's got a hand cannon because, you know, sometimes you just need to shoot people. Speed 7, mat 7, focus 7. Def 16, armor 15. So she is pretty able to survive. She's got relatively high def. She's not the highest def. But she's only got the 16 boxes. So if you get to her, she will probably die.
Okay.
The second page of the card is where it gets really interesting. So she's got Blood Trade, which is the classic Scar kind of mechanic, where she can upkeep spells by spending taking damage. Similarly, she can add an additional damage die to Takarix's attacks, damage rolls rather, by suffering damage. So you can really play quite aggressively using that damaging mechanic. She's also got Field Marshal Future Sight, which is just beautiful. I'll come to that later. Spell list, Admonition, classic defensive spell. Backlash, which I think is pretty much her unique spell. So it enables you to put it onto a war jack, and then you get the feedback effect that the Satixus Raiders have just on any attack. Black Spot, which is allows you to generate extra attacks against warrior units. So it's very good for kind of just overwhelming against infantry hordes. She's got Blood Rain and Soul Strike as her two sort of nukes, and she's got Death Ward, which is a sort of defensive spell. And then on the feet, she's got feet which is very similar to Scar 1's feet. She can take up to 5 damage points. For each damage point she suffers, she can either increase the death of a model of a friendly model by 5 or decrease the attack rolls of an enemy model by 5. So there's a potential there for a 10-point swing on key models. And then also affected models cannot be charged, which again is quite a nice little bit of control. So that's her card.
Nice. And just to confirm that that's affected friendly models cannot be charged. I can imagine if it wasn't the friendly criteria, you'd go, I'm putting it on you, now I charge you. Oh, whoops.
Yeah.
There is no buff, hidden buff in there. Okay, cool. Right, so what we'll do then is we'll go through the categories. So the first one we have is primary win condition. So how do you see, normally with your list, how is it that you tend to, or what do you play for with her?
Well, I think I looking at the possibilities, she's probably a hybrid caster. I mean, I tend to play scenario because I like playing scenario as the player.
Yep.
But she, and I think, but she's not particularly control caster in that way.
No.
She can attrition with the feet quite well if you position yourself correctly, because you can get in there. And basically give yourself another turn of not being dead, with which is quite good with Crickstacks, because they're often dead if they're up in front. She can assassinate herself. She can do quite a lot of damage herself if she can get in. And there are these kind of cute plays with Backlash that sometimes get you an assassination, but not really. It's more about bullying the other caster and getting them down to sort of half health so that they play a lot more conservatively. So I would say she's a hybrid caster.
Would you, just to go through this, and obviously there'll be a lot of discussion because these are all still new, would you not in that case say that she would be more of an attrition caster in that case? I mean, you win via scenario, but does she have to actually attrition models out to get the scenario win, or does she have something that will actually push things out of scenarios, things you take in your list to actually just win even without killing the models? And similarly with the assassination, she's got ways of killing an enemy caster, but is that just because she has things like Black Spot to just destroy so much stuff, a feat to trade so well that she just ends up destroying the enemy army and then has a few things to, take the opponent out as an assassination? So is it, if a true hybrid, I would say, would be someone that could actually just, I do think that she's possibly both assassination and attrition, because against War Machine with Satixis, she's got a very good chance of just killing a caster without actually killing an army. But against Hordes, and she doesn't have that out, and this is why you're on, because you've got the experience. I mean, do you see there's normally ways where you'll just kill the enemy caster and most of their army is still just sort of sat there, kind of going, what happened?
No, yeah, I would say more she's an attrition caster then, because I've never actually, once or twice I've got that cheeky assassination out where they're surprised that she's managed it, but normally you are peace trading quite heavily and you are getting you're making your way to get the you're opening up that late game assassination,
yeah,
rather,
I mean, she
than
seems
just
like a
sort of
really
running straight
good in. Attrition caster as well from that, with things like Black Spot, with Death Ward, so she's not taking the damage on her model units, she's also really pounding the enemy warrior models, and also not to forget Admonition can also be used to help with the trade in that regard. I do think she is a really good broad attrition caster, but as I said, I don't really see, she doesn't have any pushes, she doesn't have any on the card or any ways other than Backlash, which only works against say half the field and can sometimes be played around. Obviously if your opponent doesn't know what's going on, it's going to be over quickly, but if they do, you'll tend not to win that way. So we'll go for assassination. What are your thoughts, Mark, just because we've got three people on to make sure there's a bit of a thought each way?
Yeah, I was looking at the spells. It looks like attrition to me. You've got the +2 armor. You can put on something important. Black Spot on, I don't know what's in your list, but Black Spot on something like a Wraith Engine, giving it 6 attacks into infantry, and Admonition's just wonderful in attrition. It's just a free trade, isn't it?
Cool.
Yeah, I'd give attrition.
Right then, so I'll pop
that
down.
And Black Spot goes on to the opposing... It's an opposing thing rather than onto your own model. So
Yeah, sorry, black and then something like that to go in.
Yeah, yeah, you choose a unit and that unit's gone, basically, with Black Spot, which is... yeah, so I agree with you both that it's an attrition caster.
Yeah. No, that's weird. As I said, this is like one of the things that eventually this will become sort of second nature, but at the moment we are kind of just discussing through them. So right now, let's flip it on its head. Obviously against people that you've played against, because we don't want these to be that kind of the first time caught out, or I didn't know that happened. How is it you tend to lose with her on general? Is it that you know, she gets pushed out of scenario, she gets assassinated quite early on because, you know, people can just get to her through the type of army that you take? Or is it again the other way around, that your peace trading doesn't go as well as we think it should, and then eventually she's put into danger and either loses on scenario or is assassinated herself?
I mean, I would say attrition actually is a good way of defeating her, because she has to push so aggressively with the feet, but they're still crick stacks, so they're still, if you can just get away from, like, just not, you know, just sort of stop them from doing the work in that first bit, if you can out-threat them, or if you can kind of control those models that she's put up and feeted on, she will then crumble the next turn.
Yeah. So is that kind of like, she's so geared towards that attrition side of things that, yeah, and all those spells, that if that still doesn't work, she just doesn't have an out in scenario and an assassination that way.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Cool. Right. So, and it's, do we agree, Mark?
I mean, Amsel's going to know better. When I look at a caster like this and I worry about assassination, you feed and you upkeep a few spells and it can only take one lucky boosted gunshot. Can't it, and you'd be gone.
Yeah.
Do you tend to find that happens, though? Because although we look at that on the page, that's one of the reasons why we get people on that have actually played it, because as much as we say that, is she normally just inside the kill box, far, far away, because she doesn't need to be that far up, you know, behind a model that, you know, she normally takes? Because that's the thing, like, we always say Sevi 1 is dead easy to kill, but normally he's way, way back and is never going to get killed that way. So, I mean, does that happen? Does that tend to happen? You have to push so hard with her that she does get assassinated a lot of the time, or is she, you know, through arc nodes, through the way that her spells work, she doesn't actually need to be anywhere near, and therefore being low health isn't that much of a problem?
I mean, I think it's about how well you play her. We're going to come to this later on with the sort of floor and ceiling, because I think if you're not used to her, she will get assassinated, and if you're having a bad day and you forget to do something, she will get assassinated. Like, that I've played a game recently where I just admonitioned her into a charge lane and she died because I was just not paying attention. So I think it's things like that if you're not paying attention, she will get assassinated. But if you know what you're doing with her, she even though you're on quite low health, you're usually spending time about half health, you can keep her safe.
Yeah.
The old Tatixis theme, before they updated it, when she had Pathfinder, through that theme, she was really, really hard to kill then, because you could sit her in a forest or somewhere and she could get wherever she needed to be. But there were a few bits of tech as well, like she really, really wants a Raider Captain nearby to stop her from being knocked down. Because again, that gives her that extra ability to just sort of survive.
Yeah.
A lot of that range assassination.
Like you say, I mean, it does sound like she isn't going to be assassinated because she has these things that stop those simple assassinations, you know, like knock them down, shoot past the entire army, that kind of thing. So it is tends to be, there's nothing left in front of her. She is going to be on low health. She, you know, even though she is stood near the back, you know, she's at that point going to die if she's not got the models to block the way and get in the way. Okay.
Yeah, absolutely, I think so.
Cool, right. So, on to the next one. So, personal involvement. So, this one I kind of feel is pretty... I mean, we've basically just described it anyway. So, we've got Force Multiplier, which is the 10 to stand just in the kill box and assist the Force through buffs, feats, and improves the army output. I don't really think she's a ranged assassin. She's not really a melee bruiser, because although she can trade, she's that I feel is more of a like a smash things. You don't really play her as a defensive anchor, do you?
No, not really.
No,
because you do even though she's got that defensive feat, you do need to you sort of have to feat aggressively in a weird way.
Yeah.
I think she's probably a force multiplier.
Yeah. I mean, she's got some spells and arc nodes, but I mean, when was the last time you kind of just went, right, no other spells are being cast, I'm just going to throw out loads of nukes?
Never.
Okay, well, yeah, there you go.
I mean, occasionally I'll cast a Blood Rain or a Soul Strike if I'm trying to get at like a choir member or so, you know, Beast Handler at the back, but you're not really, because you're probably trying to cycle Black Spot, you've got various upkeeps you want to keep going, you probably had to put out one or two bits of focus because she does like a few jacks. Mm. She's not going to be doing that, those sort of spells all the time.
Yeah. Fair enough. Right, so in that case, we will move, because that was fairly clear, that one. We'll move on to feat type and grade. So we've got offensive, defensive, control, or hybrid.
I mean, technically it's a defensive feat because it just pushes your pushes the dice mass completely in a way that makes things really difficult for your opponent to get any work done.
Yeah.
So,
I'd agree with that because it's defensive in not just in the our stuff gets buffed, but it's also the debuff side to it, which is obviously quite important. So, I mean, it's only maximum 5 models, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, what would you put as the grade for that? Because, I mean, we talked about this on the last episode with Vlad, the fact that he's got D3 plus 3 models, and that was the Super Soldier Serum that we ended up putting as a C, because although the effect is very powerful, it's only on limited models. So, I mean, how do you see this effect and as a feat? Is it a very good feat? Do you tend to find that, you know, you only get a few key things and it doesn't really... No, that's not what really defines a kind of thing.
I mean, I build around the feat, so I think it's different. It's that weird one, because the thing you're talking about with like Vlad 2 is he wants to put that feat onto warrior models, doesn't he? So that having only sort of 3 or 4, you know, that sort of quite a small amount of models to feat on, is quite limiting. Whereas Scar, she basically wants to put her feet onto her own jacks, onto herself, and maybe onto a key piece in the opponent's army.
Yeah.
So I've found that the 5, sometimes I only use 4, you know, so I've never found that I don't have enough opportunities with the feet, and I'm not affecting as many models as I want to.
Here's a question for you. Just, and this is my thoughts about how it could potentially be better. Do you tend to find, and this is one for Mark as well, do you tend to find there are more than 5, except for obviously swarms and infantry and stuff like that, but there's like 5 key pieces in the enemy army that are very dangerous to you? Because if you could always just be like, okay, those 2 jacks, those 2 battle engines, and that colossal, all -5, that's effectively giving your entire army the equivalent of +5 defense in that case, which is like an army wide buff of +5. I mean, does that tend to happen, or?
I don't think so, because I mean, usually if I'm doing that, the way it's a weird feat, because part of how it works is the tilt effect. Because it's not an armor feat, and armor feats tend to be, you know, you can grind through them. You know, it's all about just getting your things up, because what you're ideally doing with it is making your opponent get frustrated that they can't hit anything.
Yeah.
And I don't know, it's I've usually only used it on opponent models. I usually only use one of the opposing models because it's whatever they've put up as their kind of, I'm going to trade this piece, or this piece is going to do my work this turn. Hmm. And then you take that piece away from them. You haven't even killed it. You haven't done any damage to it. You've just said, yeah, that piece that you thought was going to be doing all the work next turn, it's not doing anything.
Yeah.
I think that ends up being much more valuable than because of the way you're probably not going to have your whole army in range of their whole army, if you see what I mean. But yeah. Then again, I don't know.
Partly well, I mean, it's the flexibility of it, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, that's the bit where I'm actually a bit indecisive on this. I mean, I would put that... initially, I'd go, right, it's obviously a C because it's very similar to Vlad in the fact that, yes, there's only a couple of models that can be affected. It's a great ability, but on the whole, it's only a few... You know, it's a maximum of 5 models that are going to be affected. Is that going to be a case that you use it and your opponent just kind of goes, okay, I'll ignore those 5 and play around it? Or is it the case that her typical army might only have... you know, 5 key models, and therefore it's effectively the same as saying my entire army gets +5 defense. So I mean, I suppose that's you know, I mean, thinking about it from the Legion point of view, like if you look at the Legion heavies, if suddenly, you know, you're playing against like a Fianna list which only has 5 heavies, if you could just turn around and be like all 5 heavies -5 attack roll, then at that point that's like an army wide.
Well, that's GG, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's what, sorry?
That's good game, that. That's like, my feet's better than Fianna's, isn't it?
Exactly, that's what I'm thinking. So, that, I mean, that's my thought there, is that whereas the Vlad's is limited to only its own models, and there is no affecting enemy models, it's not like you can say, you know, X amount of models are all -3 to all their stats. This one you can, which actually means that if there is, like, a Colossal, or, I mean, can she affect Colossal, just in case I'm...
Yeah, so
you can literally turn around and be like, that Colossal there, -5 attack rolls. That those 2 Stormstriders, -5 attack rolls. And at that point, you know, if that's even, you know, if that's where all the attacks are coming from, then you're effectively getting in an army-wide buff.
Yeah.
So, I mean, in that case, I'm thinking it's pushing it more to a B. I don't think it's A. I don't think it's up there in A, because an A would be the one where it is literally just my entire army gets +5 defense. There is no, I have to be crafty about it. But I actually think it's kind of more towards the B. I mean, what do you guys think?
I mean, I'd say a B but that's because she's my favourite caster, so I don't know if that's like point of view.
I'd definitely say it's a B. Like you say, an A would be everyone. A C would be, I'm picking 5 of my own models and or 5 of theirs. But the flexibility to say, well, I'm going to take my heavy that's here, your two models there that can hurt me, and that's it. And I'm going to have a turn next turn where you're just going to roll dice and fail. It's amazing. That's easy to be, isn't it?
The idea of someone being -10 effectively.
Yeah.
That's mental.
It is, and that's what I mean about it being sort of slightly tilting in a slightly mean way, like, because it does, it can put people's plans off, like, so it, in something, rather than, it's not just a dice math of it, it's that they sit there going, well, I was going to do this next turn, but the model's still there, but I can't do anything.
Yeah, and it is just defense and attack rolls, which is another key thing, I think, because... that's anything. That's not like just ranged attack rolls and they go, oh, all right, I've got magic or melee. That is just attack rolls, so everything is pretty bad. So, yeah, fair enough. Okay, so we'll pop that down as a B in that case. Okay, so key spells and grades. So we'll... looking at this, we're only really looking at the key side of it because everyone has like the nuke or the spell that they never really cast. But I actually think she's got quite a good spell list. You know, there's quite a lot of things on there that... yeah, you will cast, maybe not Blood Rain. I mean, do you tend to cast that often?
Well, actually, yeah. Every now and then. I think there's no spell on her list that I've never cast. Because and there's no spell that is just, you know, the thing you cast every game and it just wins or just does all the work she needs. She's a real toolbox caster with her spell list. You get to choose what's important. So sometimes Blood Rain is actually really good if someone has put out a load of jamming models and they think that you know, because you're crits, you probably can't get rid of all of them. And then you just pop Blood Rain on it, and then they're all dead. Or, you know, or like, the continuous corrosion on it can be really, really useful against, say, Iron Fang Pikeman, that sort of thing. So, it, even though it's sort of a bit rubbish, or like not the most sort of flashiest spells, I still cast it fairly regularly.
Yeah. I mean, just looking at the different categories, so we'll do the category before we do the grade there. I do actually think she is a pretty good toolbox. I mean, you mentioned toolbox then, and I was just looking around that you've got the offensive, the defensive, board control, threat progression, scenario, and toolbox. She is a pretty good toolbox. You know, she's got the defensive debuffs, the force multiplier out that way. She's got the defensive buff. She's got the board control and things like that, in the fact that she's got admonition. And even that could be used for things like scenarios. You know, you're trying to push something out of a scenario or get it out of a scenario and they just walk around and back into the zone, that kind of thing. And then she does have backlash. And as you mentioned, there are the two nukes do actually have some kind of use there. So yeah, toolbox. I'd agree definitely with the toolbox side of things. She has a bit of everything. How good everything is, I don't know. I mean, it kind of feels everything feels useful. I mean, do you tend to find that everything is cast every game, or do you tend to find that her spells are the reason why you play her?
I don't play her because of the spells.
Yeah,
but I think it's actually the Field Marshal and the feat that really makes her
sort of sick. That's like her key thing.
Yeah. But having said that, you will be casting spells all game, and you will be choosing things. And they are important. Black Spot and Backlash are both quite key to how you deal with... I suppose that's in a pairing as well, because I tend to play her when I'm expecting to face a lot of infantry. And then I'll pair her with a caster that will go well into armor or into sort of bricks, because that's the thing she can't do is crack armor.
Right. What would you give her grading to start with then?
I think she's probably a solid B, but yeah, Mark?
It's a really good spell list, isn't it? I just keep looking at it. It's a high B, isn't it?
Yeah, I think we're definitely. I don't think it's an A.
The spell list. You could get your spells. You could go in. I mean, all Quicks casters. You look and you go, that's a good spell list.
Yeah,
you know, yeah. It's Quicks, isn't it? So I'd agree on a B.
I think a B. Yeah, I'd agree on a B there. I think that, you know, she's got. They're all good spells. I think that's the point. Is that none of them might be, you know, those A rated spells, or none of them might be like caster defining spells. Maybe outside of Black Spot, because I think that's kind of her thing. On the spell list, but again, none of them would you look at and go, well, that's defunct. And I think, like we mentioned, even the nukes have their place in the way that she plays. So yeah, happy with the B in that case. So toolbox and B, you're doing well here. You've picked a good caster. Lots of B's. I can almost hear Rich going, but Vlad should be an A. okay,
it's because we're cricks and we cheat.
Yeah, basically, yeah. right then, so army focus. So we've got infantry horde, infantry brick, beast brick, or balanced. So what kind of list does she tend to like to run?
I would say balanced. Although she can do infantry horde very well.
She's cricks, isn't she? So they can always do infantry horde.
But the weird thing with her is that I keep saying weird thing with her, but the way I tend to play is I wouldn't put her in like Black Industries, but if she's in one of the like Satix's the Scourge of the Broken Coast theme, she's still not probably only taking one free model, because you actually want to have a fair few jacks in there. So I think she can do infantry horde, but she probably likes to have a few likes to have some high quality jacks in there.
Yeah.
To sort of play the mix around a bit.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
So yeah, but I mean, I would have thought that, because you don't want, as much as an infantry horde's there, unless, as we mentioned, you're going to feed on the enemy key pieces, you've just got too many people to protect. You know, like maybe the key solo or something like that, or a self. So you agree with that, Mark? Because she's much more sort of balanced. Do you tend to find, when you've played against her, that she's kind of got a mix of jacks and units?
I don't think I've played against her in Mark 3. But in Mark 2, I think it was. To be perfectly honest with you.
Well, if Amstel sells her quite well, which he's doing well so far, you might see a few more after people have listened to the cast.
Yeah, we've got quite a lot of crit.
Who was that?
I think you sold it very well. I think I'll expect to see more of her.
Yeah.
I just say we've got quite a lot of Crix players in our local meta, and I always bang on about Scar 3, and none of the other players. Crix players, they all play Scar 1, and so I'm a bit kind of, hopefully we'll get some more people playing her.
I believe you've done well. So you mentioned the favourite theme, so Scourge of the Broken Coast is the Sitixis one.
Yeah.
Does she play in that? Because that's not a silly question, really, to be fair, because sometimes you go, they're obviously going to play in that, and you go, actually, much better in this other theme.
I mean, I think I haven't played her since the CID dropped, and they changed the theme, and they changed the Blood Witches. So, because I've been actually playing Legion for the last couple of months, but I don't know if she actually still works in that theme. But she definitely did work in it before, because she was getting Pathfinder, and Pathfinder, Blood Witches, ambushing with Entropic Force onto a black spotted unit is just. I can see why they changed that theme benefit from all of those things, and they changed the Blood Witches. So I think she still worked in that theme. I actually think the new one, the Slaughterfeet Raiders, looks really interesting with her.
Yeah.
Because she wants some fairly expensive jacks anyway. So buffing those like a Harrow or a Kraken with Gangfighter is just gonna be really good.
We'll do the Settler then. So you've written a list, which is like the bonus for the listeners over just reading what's in the table. What is the theme that you've picked in that one then?
The list I've done is the Scourge of the Broken Coast one, because I've played it and I've got the models for it. So
we'll go with this
This is what I'd play with her if I was going to play with her tomorrow.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that's the benefit of it, is that the idea is that people can come on here, they can have an idea, and they go, right, I want to play Scar 2. Where should I start?
Yeah.
And the idea would be a balanced list in Scourge of the Broken Coast sounds all right.
Yeah. So it's Scar, Sitixis Blood Priestess, which is a free theme card, a Kraken, a Corruptor, two Defilers, one Sitixis Raider Captain, Gorman de Wolf as a merc option, a minimum unit of Blood Witches with the Blood Hag, and then a unit of Sitixis Gunslingers and a unit of Devil Shadow Mutineers. And that's the last list I was playing with her, slightly modified, and it worked very well. So the sort of key things in there are the Kraken and the Defilers just work really well with Future Sight. So you've got Defiler sprays where you don't have to choose until you've rolled to hit whether or not you're boosting, can clear out a lot of infantry that people think you can't clear out. And so it's that thing normally with Crix, you're saying, well, I'm just getting a Death Ripper because it's 6 points. But she's a caster where you think, actually, I'll pay the extra for the Defiler because it's got use beyond just the Arc Node. And again, the Kraken, one, it fuels itself once you start getting corpses onto it. Then you've got the sort of dream turn where you black spot something, you shoot it with the crack, you shoot a unit of the Kraken, kill a lot of models, and then get a second shot with that 5-inch AOE.
Plus, I'd imagine a plus 5 defense Kraken is no joke.
Yeah. Yeah, that you can't charge. So your Weapon Master Infantry that was trying to, you know, that would have destroyed it, is suddenly, you know, and it's probably got Death Ward on it as well. So it's sitting there at armor 21. And it, again, it's one of those things that it's, I don't play the Kraken with any other caster because it dies quite easily. But you've just got that extra turn or two to use it, which is just quite nice. So Gorman's in there for Rust, because if you want to get that sort of feedback backlash effect going, Rust is quite a nice thing because, you know, you don't have to directly hit. You can just drift it onto a thing, because you're probably wanting to attack a light with it. And then the gunslingers can start shooting with their feedback shots. Blood Witches, I just really like them as a unit. I love playing ambush models. Without Pathfinder, they're not as good, but just that ability to threaten the side of the board is just really nice.
Yeah, definitely.
And the Devil Shadow, I'm mainly playing them because I think you probably could put in like a minimum unit of Satixis Raiders or something, but at this, I just like them as a unit, and I wasn't going to be able to get any more free cards, so I just wanted that flexibility that they offer to go off on their own. They can sort of hold a flank on their own if they need to. Yeah, so that's the list.
Good stuff. Right, and then the final two rankings for them. So faction ranking. So faction defining, first team, bench, or snowflake. Now, I think we can easily get rid of snowflake and faction defining because, you know, we're not seeing her everywhere. You know, she isn't the you know, the Denny of Cricks currently, and she's not a snowflake. You know, she's not outclassed by any other caster in Cricks, I don't think, for what she does. So really, is it that she is a first team, that she's, you know, a good caster, broad application and combinations that you'll see, you know, you will see her at events? Or is she a bench, so she's kind of got this niche that she likes to play in, or a specific skill set, and you'll normally only see her when a specific meta comes around? So what are your thoughts there?
I think she probably would be first team, except for the fact that Scar 1 exists. And, you know, Crix as well has just got such a strong roster of first team casters. I mean, it's the faction that is defined by what the casters do rather than necessarily what the, you know, what the individual models do.
Yeah.
So I think she probably is bench.
She has like a specific thing that she will come out for, and she will do, like, for example, the armor 21 plus 5 defense Kraken.
Yeah. But yeah, you can't, I think you can't pop her into any list and, you know, and expect her to do well. You still have to. So in that sort of sense, you and she's quite a difficult caster to play in the sense of getting your head around some of the mechanics. She's not difficult, like complicated. She's just, they're just easier casters in the stable. So yeah.
So she's a bit of a bench caster. Are you in agreement there, Mark?
Yeah, I think so. Like I say, I've not seen her in Mark 2, so she's definitely Mark 3 even. So she's definitely on a bench.
Yeah.
Somewhere.
Definitely.
But looks like a lot of fun. I can understand why Amstel's picked her.
Yes.
Just look like a thinker, but rewarding. I've been playing Saren a bit recently. He's very similar. When you really feel like you've earned it.
And as much as, because we've got, for Snowflake, we've got normally outclassed by the other casters in the faction, as much as you mentioned Scar 1, I do think that she does some specific things that you would take her for over Scar 1. It's just Scar 1 has more of a broad application. So in a pairing, if you're just looking as like your main list, Scar 1 will definitely can fill that main list, but I kind of see Scar 2 as being a good choice as that off list for certain. You know, she might be like, oh, she just does really well into this faction, which my main list can't cope with. So, yeah, happy with the bench. Okay, floor and ceiling. So you've kind of alluded to this throughout. So she's floor. How easy is she to come in and just play?
Well, I think she's very easy to play. Like I say, she was the second caster I ever played with. Yeah. I lost most of my early games with her.
Yeah.
But she is not, you know, the mechanics that she has aren't difficult to understand. You know, she's not, and the risk reward there is pretty obvious. You know, you damage yourself, that's a risk that you take. There's no kind of, and it's all quite binary, I think. But she's not. So the floor, I suppose, is relatively low in the sense that you can play her and won't, unless if you're playing other sort of beginners, say.
Here's a good way of framing it then. Do you think that if you put her down next to a caster, I'm just trying to think of a simple caster, like, so say for example like Butcher 3 or something like that, who you get him, he's got a big axe, all his spells and abilities are about going and chopping things up, do you think that she would take longer to get to grips with, or that she has much more complications in the nuances of her feet and her spells than someone who, and maybe Butcher 3 is about I can hear the Kador players screaming at me from here, but do you think that, you know, because she has such a broad spell list and such a broad feat, and as you mentioned, a lot of the abilities can actually put you in the danger zone, you know, it's not just the I say, you know, go and everything happens, the fact that she has that kind of damage being done to her, do you think that do you think that's good for a beginner? Would that, you know, would they come in and just get to grips with them in the first, you know, first five games? And they know everything that she does?
You wouldn't know everything that she does, I don't think. I think, yeah, you would. And actually, you probably would lose quite a lot, which is what I did. But then again, I suppose it just, a lot of the toolkit clicked with me. So even when I was losing, I was really interested in developing that toolkit and working out why it was that I was losing with her.
Yeah. I understand that you're saying, when you say low, because a lot of the stuff you read is, you know, it's quite binary in what it says. You know, you read it, it does this. But for me, I was actually, she was one of the ones where I thought would be a medium to possibly high, because she is so unforgiving. You know, if you upkeep too many spells, you feat too hard, and you don't know the fact that, you know, what everyone's threat ranges are. And as Mark said, you do it, you stand in the wrong place, you don't put admonition on the right thing or on her, one boosted attack could possibly kill her.
Yeah.
Means it might take a while for you to actually go, okay, basic game to winning, you know, even just getting to the point where you win 50-50 of your games with her could take a while. I mean, what are your thoughts, Mark? Just it's not between me and Emsa.
Yeah, I think it looks like you can walk in, you can put Death Ward and Admonition on, a couple of things, Backlash or Black Spot, wherever you want, and just walk forward and enjoy yourself. But it's the fine details of it, the intricate side of it, that I think will be quite a high ceiling. Where there's that much more to learn to cast it. I think you can come in, you might win the odd game just from having some good spells, but I think it's a really deep set of cards to learn, and there must be plenty to keep going with, definitely.
So what are we thinking there, a low floor high ceiling or medium floor high ceiling?
Depends how much you like losing. Or how much you mind losing. I think
so we go medium floor high ceiling then.
That sounds itself. If, you know, if she's easy to get to grips with, you know, that would be someone for me that is just, you know, you read what it says, but it's dead easy to just get to grips with and not lose straight away. That was always my one for this was always why Denny was great in battle boxes, because while everyone else was trying to figure stuff out, her spell list was say these words, roll these dice, boom, you're in. And oh, yeah. And by the way, she looks fragile, so don't stand near anything, which you kind of get the fact, even the fact that she's fragile made you go, okay, I'm not going to be silly. Whereas even Scar has Life Trader. You want to get in there with your additional dice, and you know, I would imagine Amsoul would be like, no.
Yeah.
do not run her straight towards the enemy. She is not Butcher. You know, yeah. So okay, so we'll put her as medium high in that case. And that is cool. Scar 2. So thank you very much, Amsoul. That was quite, I mean, to be fair, I actually learned quite a bit there, because as Mark mentioned, I've not seen Scar 2 this side of Mark 3. So although I do feel now that Amsoul's come forward, we may actually see her a bit more. Maybe, you never know. Okay, so Mark.
Defeat in Mark 2 was you couldn't attack the model, wasn't it?
Couldn't be targeted. So there
couldn't
were
be targeted,
that,
yeah.
She hated Siege, because Siege would just not target her and kill her anyway.
Yeah.
Ground pounders and
that's
stuff.
Yeah, I remember a game with a Croak Raider running just out of a melee range, and then Ravagor shooting it, because Ravagor's used to have corrosive as well, so that was fun.
Right, so Mark, who is it that you have chosen?
I've picked Absalonia II, the daughter of Everblight.
if anyone has ever seen or met Mark, you'll know that this is not a surprise at all. So
I rarely play her nowadays, to be honest with you.
Really?
I force myself away. I mean, she's in my case at the moment. She's in my pairing at the moment, which is probably part of the reason I picked her. But I think I went almost all of 2017 without playing her.
I didn't feel like it, I've got to admit.
Oh, up till Blood and Oil. Just before Blood and Oil, I picked her back up again, and that's why you hate her.
Yes. Right, yeah. So off you go. Tell us all about the love of your life that is Absalonia 2.
The love of my life, Absalonia 2. So she's speed 7, strength 8, mat 7, rat 6, def 15, arm 16, command 8. She has flight and is on a 40mm base. She's got 3 attacks, 2 of them the same, her claws, her power 14 and magical, and her stinger is power 12 and magical, fury 6 and 18 boxes. Her main special rule on the back of a card is Alpha Hunter. It's got 2 rules to it. The first one is that war beasts in her battle group that activate in her control run, charge, and make power attacks for free. The other half of it is if she destroys an enemy model during her activation, then war beasts in her battle group activating within her control get +2 speed and +2 mat for the turn. She's got reposition 5 because she needs it. And her stinger, her low power attack, has energy siphon. So if it hits a model, it can take fury or focus point from it, which is great if you're playing against war beasts. Spells are very simple. She's got Bracer, which is fortifying hordes. It's cost 2, +2 armor, and the model and models base to base with it can't be knocked down, pushed, or moved by a slam. She's got Hex Bolt, is a magical missile that's everywhere in Legion. It's rubbish. She's got Psycho Surgery, which is a heal for the entire battle group, and Return Fire. And her feat is the last side of a card, which is great. It is Absalonia's battle group, including herself, get +2 strength, flight, and all their melee weapons become range 2.
Okay, so, and I mean, the key thing here, I think, to note, just when they're separate, is the Alpha Hunter and the feat are kind of, you know, you tend to want to get both of them going off at once. So really, you always feel like the feat is +2 to strength, flight, range, speed, and mat. It tends to be how it works,
yeah,
doesn't it?
I mean, generally,
it took me a while to realize that it wasn't just the feat that did that.
Yeah, getting it all every turn. Getting like the speed and the mat every turn is amazing. If you can get it, you can't always get it.
No. Okay, then, right. So we'll run through it again with yourself. So, primary win condition, is she a scenario, assassination, attrition, or hybrid?
She's an attrition.
Yeah.
Really. She goes, the general idea of your list is getting your entire battle group, which is probably 95 out of 100 points in your list, into an Alpha Strike, take so much off your enemy that they can't really fight back, and then you either win by assassination or scenario the turn or two after.
That's... I would probably agree with, and I have been on the receiving end of that quite a few times. Have you, Amson?
I've not played either with or against her yet, so I'm kind of interested.
Yes. They are deceptively fast for these big, you know, podgy beasts that are meant to be blind, that suddenly fly across and are very accurate.
I assume you take her with the Carnivian chassis rather than like Nerfs and stuff.
A bit of a mix, actually. We'll come to that in a bit. I've evolved recently. To be honest with you.
Bit of apt language there. Right, okay, so we'll go with attrition for the primary win condition. On the other way, primary loss condition. Do you tend to find you get scenarioed out early and she can't stop it, assassinated, or attrition in the other way? They just get your beasts before you can get them in.
Yeah, this one, it's a funny one because she's such Alpha Strike can go for the attrition. If it doesn't happen for you, then generally it's whatever your opponent chooses. Really, like it. I've had games where I've gone in, I've got all my charges off perfect, and then I've not rolled more than 4 for damage on like all the dice, and you're just like, well, kill all my beasts because they're made of paper and decide how you want to win. I've put assassination because medium base, and if you, generally you've got a lot of maxed out beasts, and she's quite easy to take down if you do it wrong, because she does have to get forward herself.
I mean,
but equally, scenario can be a problem because you haven't really got units to score zones and all that sort of stuff.
I mean, one of the things that I had actually thought looking at this myself was assassination, because from the way that I tend to play against when you win, and when you win consistently, obviously, as you said, it can always work in different ways, but one of the ways that I tend to find is that when she puts herself forward for the feat, you know, to make sure that everything is, you know, still benefit and things like that, that you tend to, you know, yes, you get the scenarios where they do nothing, and then you get to go, well, I'll just use all my heavies to kill your heavies and go from there. But you tend to find that even if they've left half the army left, or, you know, it's not gone quite as well, a couple of things are left, or they've not killed the caster or something like that, that at that point, that's where Abby's at her weakest. You know, so they may not have an army left to kill all the beasts in return, although, they, as you said, they can be made of paper. But just killing Abby, because at that point, you tend to find if you don't kill her then, you just won't kill her during the game. You know, she'll just back off and you know, buffer beasts and stuff like that, and you'll never get a chance. But that is that kind of, like, did my feet work? Did I crush you so much that you now can't threaten Abby? No, I didn't. Okay, Abby goes squish. I mean, is that what you tend to find?
It can happen. Late game, when you get to low model count, generally she's in a bound zone trying to score it, and everything you put in that zone, she'll just kill to get Alpha Hunter. So it can be interesting, like, if you can spread out and back off, and the scenario, like, cause you do get some... You do take a few key pieces out regardless of what happens.
Yeah.
Like on a bad game, you take a few. And you do end up late game, you can push it back. And like you're alright, I think, but it is generally assassination that I lose. Okay. Generally. Unless I end up with like you play some people who don't want to assassinate you and I've just got Abby left. And I'm lose. Like you know, like when you play rich and you won't assassinate,
yeah. Because even a 90%er means 1 in 10 times that he loses the game.
Yes.
Right. Or as I heard lately, a 90%er is a 10% chance that you throw the game away, which sounds very different. Okay, so we'll go down for assassination. Personal involvement. So, force multiplier, ranged assassin, definitely not. Melee bruiser,
no, definitely not.
Defensive anchor, spell slinger, or hybrid?
I think it's a hybrid because she is a force multiplier.
Yep.
Really? But she's not your typical force multiplier. She's not a sit at the back force multiplier. And she's not a melee bruiser, but she goes it every turn she kills something, or you're doing it wrong. And she'll constantly kill a light. I've had her kill Getrix from full health in the past, on feet turn, obviously, using the energy siphon. It takes a full beast to kill it.
Do do you not, I mean, this is just from my own perspective, is that I do tend to find that she will, I mean, it might not just be in the kill box, but she will be literally her 12 inches behind where her beasts are, and will use the hex bolt or charger, you know, something that someone's used to contest, just to get that bonus, and then she will reposition back away, unless obviously, as you mentioned, you know, everything's dead, and then it's, you know, at that point every caster
that doesn't sound like a lot of fun, you know. That doesn't sound like a lot of fun. Most of her spells, she bet, if you can't reach something to charge with her, that's when you hex bolt. When people back off, then you get spell master and you hex bolt. But if she can charge something, she's far better charging it. She's got three initials, you know, and then you can back off, and then you can just put a wall of beasts in the way, can't you?
Yeah.
Which is probably why I live by assassination more, to be fair. But I like to think that she does a lot of work. I like it when she does a lot of work. There's times where you don't want to, like the dreamer. You go and you kill something, all fall down.
Obviously you've had limited experience with it, but we're going between hybrid, which is a combination of force multiplier and a bit of a melee bruiser, or just force multiplier herself. So which from the description, from the way that Mark's described her, where are you landing on that one?
I'm sort of landing on force multiplier, I think. I mean, I think, yes, she can kill things, but most casters can kill things. And just because she wants to kill something, she's not like the child or butcher. She doesn't want to sit at the front, is what I kind of tend to feel a melee bruiser is going to be doing.
Yeah, okay, that's fair. Yeah, she's not going to sit where the butcher's going to sit now.
No, okay. We've had an overrule. Like I said, the 3-man system works.
Like I said, she needs reposition 5. Yeah,
yeah. She's a force multiplier, which is a really interesting force multiplier, I think. But yeah, that's all what she's doing, isn't it?
Yeah. Okay. So we'll go with force multiplier then. So on the next list we have feat type and grade. So we have offensive, defensive, control, and hybrid. I think this is pretty simple on what type of.
Yeah, I've said it's offensive, I think.
Yeah.
I'm gonna go with offensive.
Okay, so this is the difficult part. What grade? Now it's definitely not. I don't think it's a C or an E because they are good buffs. You know, they're all usable buffs, basically giving reach, flight, strength to all your beasts, to your battle group as well. So it's army wide. So really, we're talking, you know, A to B category here, in my opinion. What are your thoughts? We'll go to Amsel first, and then Mark can try and you know, windle us where he wants.
I mean, I think it looks like an A feat to me. When you compare it's the biggest thing on her card is that feat, and the way that feat interacts with the fact that you're probably, you know, like Mark was saying, your army is going to be 95% of it spent on beasts.
Yeah.
It feels, to me, it probably feels like an A, but I don't know.
Okay.
Like, I've never played it, so I don't know how that feels on the table.
Oh, it's amazing. It's amazing.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
I take it you're an A, aren't you, Mark? I was thinking this.
I've said B. I thought I'd be level-headed, and I've said B. Amsel said A, so I think if I say A, then it wins as an A, doesn't it?
I'm actually, and this is kind of good. This is really good because I'm actually in the A period. I'm in the A park as well. I kind of think you could argue both B or A, but I actually think the reason why people, when you talk about Abby, they talk about the feat, you know, and Abby
yeah.
currently dominates an entire faction, which is the Grimkin, you know, just her feat, just that combination of what she's got, the fact that it's, you know, and it's not, there is no, I don't want to say it's easy button, but it's that kind of thing where you could literally go, okay, now is the time, it happens, there's no, I have to trick, you know, other than the mat side of things, she just, you know, it just happens. She just goes, right, now everything gets flight, everything gets reach. So that's kind of a threat projector, and everything hits like a truck. You know, and it just happens. Yeah. You then get a bit of a bonus through her Alpha Hunter, but it is just, as you said, it's 95% of the army gains that bonus as well. So I'm actually quite happy to go with the A, which is strange because it was the two non...
I was just like, the feet to B, if you put the feet and Alvehunter together, that's an A. That's everything. But when you think of some of the, compared to Denny Wong's new feet, it doesn't sound as good, does it? Because like, that's an A.
But I'll
accept an A.
Would you not? I mean, as much as of the offensive feats that are out there, would you not put this up there as one of the premier offensive feats? The top 25% of offensive feats in the game.
Yeah, I'd say it's in the top 25% of
the which is what the A. Well, I mean, it's not 25%, but you know what I mean. Like, if you go offensive battle group feat, Abby is number one, basically. I think, or near enough. In Hordes, I would probably say definitely. Okay, so we'll definitely go on to go. We won't gush over her too much. Also, there is Abby 2 was my wife's favorite caster, and she used to slaughter me with her all through Mark 2. So there is a bit of a pain in there of how I used to get butchered by my wife with that. All right, so key spells. So is she offensive army buff, defensive army buff, board control, speed threat progression, scenario, or toolbox?
I've said defensive.
Yeah, you've got.
She's got a magic missile. Yeah. Bracer, a heal, an arm buff, something to make people not want to shoot you, but it doesn't really work. And a magic missile.
Yeah, I'd agree with that one, reading it. Her spell list is, like, tiny, and what you'd actually probably... You'd probably cast, I would imagine, Bracer at the start, and then Hexbottle.
Well, Bracer's generally free. Yeah. Hexbottle, if you need to kill something. I don't remember the last time I cast Psycho Surgery or Return Fire.
Yeah,
it's mostly Legion B. Die straight away.
Grade. I'm actually going the other way. I'm kind of at the D perspective on this.
You've got
one plus two armor, and then a nuke, which is a really short range nuke as well. It's only range 6. Psychosurgery is kind of good, but Return Fire. Yeah, I'm not really loving this spell list.
No, it is a terrible spell list. I've gone with C because I think that. Like psychosurgery, it's a heal. It doesn't sound great, but it's part of the reason that if you wanted to, you could play 20 shredders with Abby, because you know no one else is just going to be able to heal all those aspects on 20 beasts. And Bracer is a really good spell, so I'd say it's not D, but it's definitely not anymore. It's a middling C, I'd say.
Okay, Amsel, what are your thoughts there?
Yeah, I'd agree on that. You're looking at it and going, I'm not planning, I'll put Bracer up at the beginning, but other than that, psychosurgery is one of those things where if a Legion Beast isn't dead, it can be nice to heal it, but it's usually dead.
Yeah, it's usually dead.
Yeah, like and as much as you got that C, one plus two armor. I mean, I'm not saying that it's Bracer's a bad spell in any regard, but basically that's all I'm seeing, that every game will be useful.
Well, there's different ways to play Abby, though. List discussion's like further along, isn't it? But now, since the CID, you can play Abby in 6 Ravagos, and you can just put 6 Return Fires out and Fire Scathers, and then get a Scather in there turn 2. And into an infantry swarm, that level of board control is crazy if they want to shoot you. And then you've got use out of Return Fire.
Okay. I'm a D. Mark, you're a C. Well, Amsel, you are the deciding vote. You are a C, or a D?
I'd probably say a C. I mean, it's not... You will cast spells on there. It's not like there's spells you... It's not like there's... Some casters where you literally never look at their spell list. So, but you're definitely not bringing her for the spells.
No. Was it the Ravagold Swarm that swung you, was it?
And do you know, it's Ravagolds are amazing shooting beasts, but if you give them Alpha Hunter in the feet, they're just really, really good beasts. It's an interesting list, that one. I played it in Mark 2. But I've not played it in Mark 3, but people think it's coming back with the point decrease. But I probably won't find out.
Okay. Well, the next
they
one...
They definitely take buffs well, Ravagors, so...
Yes. We'll go on to the next one, which I think is a pretty quick one. So Army Focus, that's going to be Beast Brick, because even your alternate list was still all Beasts.
Yes, yeah, it's beasts or beasts. Your average unit is swamp gobbers. 5-6 solos. And most of them are a point offering.
So what's your favourite theme with her then? Because you can play multiple different themes in Legion and still take the battle group. So where did you land?
I've landed with Oracles because you want the Carnivian chassis. And you can only take the Carnivian chassis in Oracles or Primal Terrors. And if you're taking it in Primal Terrors, then you're 3 points from Ogryn. So generally, it's going to be Oracles. I was discussing the possibility of, because of the, she's only Fury 6 and you've got a low control, and sometimes on Scenario it can get a bit spread out. You could go in Primal Terrors and take a couple of units and get a Hellmouth for free and then still have the beasts and just have a small battle group. So it's probably an option, but I don't know if it's ideal. It'd just be different. You could go in Children of the Dragon, but you only get 3 heavies, but then light spam with her will work. With all the Nephilim lights, it will work. So you can do that, but Ravens is all the flying beasts, and they just don't get the damage done on the road.
So Oracles is where it's at then. So go on, yeah, then. For our listeners, what is the list that you would take with them?
The list I'm currently playing, I'm going to say this is all coming from memory now. I'm currently playing, I'm iffy about 8 points of it at the moment. With the point changes, but it's basically Abby, Proteus, 2 Scythians, 2 Naraths, a Seraph, a Shredder, a Bogtrog Mist Speaker, 2 Forsaken, and a Hellion, 3 of them 3, and 2 Shepherds, and 2 Spellmasters, and Swamp Gobbers.
Okay, and so any sort of walkthrough talk, how that list work, or anything for the people who want to give it a try themselves?
You run forward, and then you kill something with Abby, and then you kill half their army, and then the turn after, you kill the other half their army.
Or you get assassinated, as we've discussed.
Or you get assassinated. I played the Old Witch the other day, Old Witch 3, because our local Grimkin player was didn't want to drop Dreamer, because it's supposed to be, there's supposed to be no good Grimkin drop. And I feated basically just for reach on all the beasts and killed about 30 infantry in a turn. When you get to the Scythians are murderous, so you kind of need, you're looking at boosted 4s that you need, and everything just auto kills. The Naraths and the Proteus, one the Alpha onto them at 9. It's great.
Fair enough.
So the only bit about the list I'm unsure about is I haven't got an Argonite Lurker in there, and I've got the Mist Speaker instead for the magic weapons. And sometimes you want Blessed more than you want Guidance, because of things like Maelok. You want to be able to ignore half the armor, but card walls are a problem for Legion at the moment as well, with things like Abby might have to see through a card wall. So I need to play around with it a bit and see which way I want to go.
Okay, then. So the final two bits. So we got faction ranking. We've got faction defining, first team, bench, or snowflake. Now, I can 100% get rid of snowflake and bench, because you see her. You do see her at most events. So do you think she is faction defining or first team, Mark?
See, that's a difficult... I don't know if she's faction defining in the way that, like Thagrosh and Lilith is. She's definitely fit, but I don't know, because she runs beasts better than anyone in the faction now.
Yeah. Would you see her in every pairing at a Legion, at an event? If you looked across a Legion lists, would you expect to see her as one of the lists in every one?
No, not in every one. Not in every one.
No.
In a lot. Probably about half.
So you'd always expect to see her as a choice in a two list event. So that kind of sounds like a first team, definite first team caster. Yeah. You know, she's definitely on that list of which do I take, but she's no like Hayley was, where you're like, I take Abby, what is my second list?
No, I don't think Legion have had anything like that since Vayana dropped off from being so popular, really. I think there's 6 or 7 warlocks that you pick your 2 from at the moment.
Yeah. Okay, then.
But Abby just runs beast best.
And then floor and ceiling. Now, this, just from your description that you gave us earlier, this sounds like a very low floor.
Maybe it's that I'm very good.
Maybe.
No, I
mean,
think,
that's
I think
not
she's...
an insult to it. It's just she is
easy to get your head around, I think.
Yeah, there's not many spells you have to worry about. You know, it's not like all of her feet runs off the fact that she has to get a spell on a certain thing. It is literally just first turn, pop her spell on something, and that's that done.
Yeah.
Her feet is say go. It's not. There's no like triggering anything. So I think the most complicated part of her is probably getting that Alva Hunter off. Because even the running, like, she makes the game easier because you don't have to worry about Fury, technically.
Oh, you very rarely have to. I've had feet turns where I've been on the last beast and I've killed everything in front of me and I've realised I've had to rile. And then you Forsaken aren't doing anything.
Yeah.
They just run up.
She really does sound like she kind of makes that easier for you. Even though
she is really efficient.
Okay.
Yeah, so like the first turn, she with Oracles, you've got your upkeep out for free. So Abby slipstreams something, and the Seraph slipstreams something, and everything else runs for free, and you're balanced.
Yeah.
So you've got nothing else to do. It's great.
Do you agree with that, Amsel? Does she sound like you could get to grips with her in 1 or 2 games?
I think so. I don't see it as a caster that's going to be scratching your head over.
Yeah. Okay, so we'll move on to the ceiling. Now, this isn't that she isn't powerful. This is just once you've played, say, 100 games with her, how much more powerful do you think she becomes over when you played your first 10 games with her? Is there scope that she suddenly, you know, there's lots of nuance to her that you actually, after so many games, becomes much better? Or is she also kind of, you get to grips with her and it is just more making sure that you do what she says to do?
I don't think it's that high a ceiling. Like, I don't think it's that difficult. But I think, like, with every caster, like, I used to look at 2 units with an Absolute list and be like, how am I going to kill all of them? And now it's like, well, I'll just kill all of them.
So do you think? Do you think she could be a low?
No, I'd say she's a low medium.
After 100 games, you compare the guy who has played 100 to the guy 20, and there would be a difference that the guy with 100 has learned a lot more about what she does and her plan.
But the guy with 100's probably reached the point where he started messing around with the battle group and doing different things and come up with all the different... That's like I did in Mark 2. I went to a Blightbringer and 2 Ravagors and did everything with a ranged assassination. But I literally used a few lights to clear anything was in the way and then just did ranged assassination every game just because it was different.
Yeah.
You can keep playing it. There's all kinds of little tricks. There's like... Like, if they, you alpha, and then, like, against hordes, this works well. If you alpha, and then they go in and fill up a beast, killing one of yours, and then you send your Forsaken in and bomb and take a third to half his boxes off, and then finish it off with Abby using the energy siphon, and then you've took a heavy for basically a solo and you cast it, get an Alpha Hunter off, and then your beasts are back up and ready to go. And it's things like that, the thought process of keeping the attrition going, especially like after, because even after your alpha, you lose. Like I play with 6 heavies, you lose 2 on a good day.
Yeah. And what are your thoughts, Amsel? Are you thinking low medium or?
Yeah, I mean, I like Mark was saying, it's in the list that the complexity comes in, and you have to use the right tools to do what you're. To kind of do what you want to do with any kind of, you know. So I think that sounds like there's still going to be interesting things to be done, you know, even if you played those 100 games of her. It's not like, you know, there are some casters where after you've played, you know, 20 odd games, you don't really want to take them out again because they, it's every game goes the same, no matter how you build the list.
Yeah.
I think, you know, the by being the premium Legion Beastcaster, it means you can use whatever beasts you want and play around with that. So it just gives you that flexibility. So you're not building the list around her, you're going to building the list around what beasts you want to use.
So the ceiling comes from the beasts she can take, not and how flexible she could be with the battle group, not that she herself, you don't like get, you don't learn her, more about her, you learn more about the fact that she can run the lights or the shredders or the different things.
And so all that, and then you also, I think playing a warlock like Abby actually makes you a better player in general, because your positioning's got to be spot on. When you've only got 6 or 7 models that are going to do any type of work for you, you've got to, your positioning's got to be spot on, you've got to know all that side of it, you know. You can't just throw something away with a casual, I'll run that to there and then don't realize that you've lost it because you've not thought about where you're running it to.
Right then, guys, well, thank you very much for your time. That went quite well, I think. We got through all the categories. There wasn't too many debates, but there were some changes, which is the important thing. The three-man effect was in place. Thank you very much again for everyone who's listening out there. This has been episode 2 of War Nouns of Renown. If you want to actually go through all the details we've discussed on here, if you go to the UKISS website, which is wmhukiss.co.uk, on the top bar there is War Nouns of Renown, which you can click on, and it gives you a detailed breakdown of all the categories. And there is also a table there, which will record all the results as we're going forward, that will start to fill out with all the casters that we review. As mentioned, this is the sister cast to the main one, so we're looking to hopefully get this out every other week, and we'll get people on, hopefully like event winners and things like that, to review their favorite casters, or just people that get in touch with me and ask. So if you have any questions or any feedback, anything you want to discuss with us, please let us know on the links, or get in touch with us through the Facebook channels, Twitter, and again, that's all WMHUKISS, or UKISS as you're saying out there. And that is from me, so thank you very much, Mark and Amsel.
Thank you. Cheers, thanks a lot. Goodbye.
And hopefully see you next episode.